Can you drop your mind and let it fall into your heart, so to speak? That's a space we all share. The spaciousness, the clarity, ease, freedom. Where nothing is wrong. All right, we're going to begin talking. So before we move on with our afternoon's activities, I want to find out if anybody has any questions or comments. I know you were in community meetings this afternoon about the difference between merging with your triggers and being aware of them, and also the eating meditation and this morning's session gathering we had. So just wanting to find out, anybody wants to say or question or comment on anything? Rona, yeah.
Hi, I wanted to hear your perspective about pleasure Because for me, I realized one of my triggers with eating is if something is really pleasureful, then it makes it harder to stop. And I know with mindful eating, it's like you can enjoy it more. But I'm just curious about how do you feel like you can enjoy that pleasure, but there's not like a moment of deprivation if I'm saying no, or I don't think my body wants that. Just wanted to get your sense of like, you know, how do you experience pleasure, but finding an end point to that?
Well, when I'm present, I would say most everything is pleasurable. When I'm here, like sitting in this room at this very second, there's nowhere else I'd rather be and nobody else I'd rather be with than all of you. So I feel like pleasure has many different dimensions and valences. There's a pleasure of taste, something on my mouth, in my mouth. There's the pleasure of the wind on my face. There's the pleasure of, you know, being with Matt in the mornings when we're just kind of cuddling and whispering to each other, and Izzy is licking my toes for some reason. She really likes that. There's a pleasure of that. If I'm actually present, truly present, then somehow there's a natural wave to it. It starts, there's a crescendo, and it's over, and it's time to get up. Like this morning when Matt and I were just talking and cuddling and being with Izzy, just felt like, okay, time to get up, which didn't take away from the immense pleasure of just being with him and Izzy. It was very pleasurable, but it didn't have to go on and on, that pleasure. So I think that that might collide into the old belief of I'm not enough and there's never enough. You know, I notice, and I'm tracking it, that if I like something, unfortunately I've gotten mad into this habit. If he buys this pair of sweatpants and he really likes it, he just goes buy another one immediately just in case they stop selling that one. So I often buy two of something in case. You know, it's the just in case eating, it's the storing for the hunger to come. So they all mix in together. It's a practice of being present, mostly.
Thanks.
Because good tastes are pleasurable to just on the level of food till the body has had enough, and then it becomes not pleasurable. So it's really about paying attention. Jane? Yeah? Behind you, Jane.
Hi. My question is to do with the six steps, the fourth step. I always get very stuck there. I don't have... I can never pinpoint a particular first time of feeling that way. So my mind is kind of racing. I do have just a general feeling.
That's good enough.
Okay, good.
impression of, yeah. An association with, like that is
yeah.
good enough.
Okay, that's good. I won't search.
No. Somebody else? Kathy?
I just really want to thank you for the question in small group today, because it's something I've really been working on, naming what I'm doing when I'm in a trigger, because falling back into survival mode 5 years ago, like, set me back to 100% of my reality was trigger, and being able to separate and step back to see who am I when I'm not in my trigger, being able to see the patterns I have with defense, blame, shame, collapse, that those are the trigger. That's not who I am.
Yes.
And I really deeply appreciate that.
Good. Yes, I was wondering how the community meetings went for you all and what it was like to separate the blending of the emotion and the self with the trigger and the disidentification of it. That's really a major, major turn, shall I say, because so often I'm remembering this from, I think it was last month or the month before, I'm in a group that meets every Tuesday, Sangha meeting, very small, 6 or 7 people. And one of the women was going on and on and on and on and on about what she's gone on and on and on. And I really, really love her and I'm close with her, but I'd kind of had it. And I blurted out, "Oy, enough already." And my friend who was standing behind me said to me, "Huh, might you be triggered?" And it seems so, it's what I've said a couple of times, it seems so obvious that what I was saying was true, but I was triggered. It triggered a place in me that I didn't recognize it's triggered because it seemed so obvious that everybody would feel exactly the same way, and so that wasn't really a trigger. But any time you feel knocked out of a sense of ease. Again, I know I've quoted Byron Katie a couple of times, but she says, if you're suffering, you're believing something that isn't true. And that is a wonderful litmus test. If you're suffering, you're believing something that isn't true. So that requires a lot of awareness, paying attention, because we often suffer. By that I mean we're reactive. We get angry or hurt or and don't quite get that it's a trigger. We don't get it in that moment that it's this is a trigger, and there's some way of working with myself right now about it. We don't quite get that. We feel like it's beyond our control. It's about somebody else. We're helpless. But it's never like that. Thanks, Kathy. Anybody else? Yeah.
I am feeling a very strong attachment to my wounds.
And to your woundedness?
Yes, and I'm aware of it, and I want to get to a place of more willingness to let go of them.
Well, I did say this yesterday, I'll say it again. It's our creation, and we're often attached to our creations. So I a couple of retreats ago, I was calling it the shitty-ass ugly baby, but it's mine, and I'm attached to it. And that's how it is with our wounds. What are you doing, Judy? It's fine in here. Leave it alone. That's a good thing about being the boss, you know. I see Judy going over there. Nope, leave it alone. There's never any consensus about how hot or cold it is, as I've mentioned, in a room filled with women. Never. We're attached. We're attached to our wounds. Because mostly it's all we know of ourselves. And so letting go of those wounds feels like letting go of ourselves. And who's left when this is what I know of me? You know, the thing that I most recognize as myself, the me person, let's call it, is, and I've mentioned it a couple of times, the gloomy doomies, kind of waking up and things aren't quite right and there's a negative cast, a kind of flatness, a grayness. This isn't right and that isn't right. And, you know, I told you the human paradigm feels like something changed in the temperature. You must have had a quick draw over there before I caught you. Okay, suddenly it's just, it must have responded to your wish and your need and gotten a lot cooler. But anyway, where was I? Before I started blaming Judy, what was I saying? Oh, the gloomy doomies. Yeah, the gloomy doomies. So there's an affect that I recognize as myself when I was growing up. It's sort of like I was a chameleon, and I just took on the colors of the family that I found myself in. And they were gray colors and unhappy and melancholic and flat. And I just sort of like, that's how I walked around. I mean, there was the opposite side of, you know, when I was bright and cheery and happy and all of that, but mostly that was an utzing myself up to be that, to be a happy person. So when I wake up, it doesn't happen always, but it does happen enough where I'll wake up and I'll be, for no reason it seems, I'll be in the gloomy doomies. And if I trace it back, so there are two things to do. I could, and this has to do with being wounded, I can trace it back to what were my thoughts that I might have had in the middle of the night or that I had first thing in the morning about what wasn't right. Remember I mentioned the universal human paradigm. There's a way it should be. It's not that way, and someone is to blame. Almost everybody carries that with them. There's a way it should be, and it's not that way. And that's how we're all walking around now, before you question it. So if I question it, and I go back to what were the thoughts I had that evoked these feelings, that evoked this state and this wound, then I can just release myself from it. Or, as Rachel and I were talking about at lunch, I can notice the pattern of it. Oh, there's a pattern here. I wake up in and as this often. That's not me. I know what this is. This is me taking on this. This is me feeling like myself. The thing that I want to emphasize now is that it feels like me. Feels like me. And I recognize that state as myself, as the shitty-ass, ugly-faced baby that was the creation of what it was like to be in my family. So letting go of her, and it's not that active, so this happens sort of sideways. Through the back door. You don't say to yourself, I'm going to let go of that shitty-ass, ugly-faced baby. And now, watch me. I'll let go of her. It's not like that. I mean, sometimes you can if, as I said yesterday, you kind of ask yourself, which I often do in the middle of the night, if I asked myself, okay, if I just let go of my mind now, if I just imagine that my mind just, whatever part of my brain is responsible for memory and stories was just lifted right out of me, what would be left? There's absolute freedom there. Freedom. So there are a couple of things, ways in there, Jessica, that you could do. The pattern of it, to ask yourself the question of if I couldn't remember. Or you could say, oh, this feels like me. This is what it feels like. What thought preceded this? So there are multiple avenues here. But we're all attached to our wounds. We're attached to them. They feel like us. The thing that's so amazing about this and what the six steps leads to is an ease and a freedom and not being a me person. Being the one who was that second part of the question today in the community meetings, the awareness of the pattern. When you're aware of the pattern, you're not the pattern. You can't both be aware of the pattern and be merged with the pattern at the same time. Anybody else? One more question, then we're going to go on. Is this a little teeny baby follow-up? Okay, yeah. Since you're the only one who has another question here.
So I think that my desire for pleasure is probably greater than what's healthy for my body. So I think there's sort of like, if I'm eating something, even if there's pleasure, then there's like, I still feel like that mounting guilt, like, oh, this is not healthy for me. So I guess I'm curious, like I know you said yesterday, like don't ask a three-year-old what she wants to eat, like have an adult present. But I guess I'm just curious, like how do you do that turning point of like talking nicely to yourself to be like, okay, that's enough without it being deprivation if I'm stopping because I think it's unhealthy, even though like my body would still
find
it.
But you know what, Rona, you're in your mind about all of this. It's not about, okay, I need to stop because I think it's unhealthy and I really want to keep eating because there's something underneath all that, some fear of not getting enough, of being in a world without pleasure, of having the pleasure end and then what, of this being the only place where you can get pleasure. It's you know, like an octopus there with a lot of legs, and I think it's worth examining and seeing that. This is not about food. It's not about food.
All right, thank you for the follow-up. I appreciate it.
Yes. Good. Okay, so right now we are going to do a continuation of the six-step process that we did this morning. If you haven't already realized it, those of you who have been doing this with me since I started teaching it, which was maybe a year after I'd been doing it pretty much daily, you can't do this too much. You can't do it too much. You can't question your triggers too much, because every time you're triggered and you react from your trigger, you're reactive. And you're putting out exactly the energy that you want to change in the world. You know, so if I'm fighting something, if I'm reactive, sometimes when Matt and I get into something and we're both convinced we're right, meaning we're both triggered and not willing to look at what we're triggered by, that's basically what that means. I notice his language is, well, you're the one who blah, blah, blah. And I say, well, you're the one who blah, blah, blah. And the second one of us says, you're the one, I realize, uh-oh, we are down a rabbit hole here. It is time to stop this often. Often it will be me, I must say so myself. If he was here, he would disagree, who says, time out, time out. Let's each go to our rooms. And we'll come back in just a couple of minutes. And we do. And then we come back and it's a whole nother unwinding. Then we're both, okay, yeah, I saw I was triggered. What we want to do is look at, for those of you who are just starting with the six steps, and for those of you who are continuing with the six steps, I'm going to present one of a couple of options now in terms of the work we're going to do now. One of them is to just keep working with a trigger, a recent trigger that you had. Could be at lunch, could be when you went to take a walk, could be last night, could be just a recent trigger. We want to keep looking at what keeps you from being yourself. That's the real reason to keep doing these. It keeps, because when you're reactive, you're seeing through your wounds. You're reacting from a conclusion that you might not be aware of. But a trigger means it's touched an old conclusion. So you can do this now with a trigger, or you can do it with the pattern of triggers. So as we talked about, Rachel, that pattern that you mentioned, I took the wrong thing, it's better somewhere else. We each have, and I mentioned this, a basket of conclusions. We're really not that original in our conclusions. Everybody's pretty much got the same ones. I don't matter. I'm not enough. I'm damaged. Something's wrong with me. I'll never get it right. Maybe there are about 10 conclusions, maybe a little less, that most of us share. However, some of us highlight one more than others, depending on our conditioning, depending on what we were told about ourselves, depending on what we interpreted from what we were told about ourselves. So we want to look at, we can look at the pattern of it. Do we collapse? Do we react? Do we judge ourselves? Does our superego come out then? What happens when we notice that here it is again? Here it is again. I'm in the gloomy doomies. What do I do? Now, I could sometimes, before I caught on, I'd go to, oh, I can't believe you're doing this again. I cannot believe, no matter how much work you've ever done, that you are doing the same thing again. Are you ever going to learn? Are you ever going to get this? Are you ever going to change? Here you are, the same self that you've always been. Then comes another level of conclusions. You're a failure. You're never going to get this. Waking up is not for you. Getting it right. The whole thing. You always do this. So we want to look at pattern. Do you collapse? Do you judge yourself? Do you blame somebody else? Do you blame yourself? That's judging yourself. Collapse is just kind of fall to pieces. Judge yourself is you just diminish yourself and you become small. Anybody else can think of other kinds of patterns that you have when you're triggered? Collapse, reactive, judge yourself, judge somebody else. Can't hear you. Victim. That's blaming yourself and blaming somebody else. Yes. Yeah. that kind of encompasses the I blame myself, I blame somebody else, I'm a victim of their behavior, and I'll never get it right. Kim? I'm stupid, yes. That's a judgment. That's a variation on a judgment. I'm looking for a pattern here. Right, I abandon myself. And I abandon myself into usually judgment. I stop taking care of myself. Cheryl? Uh-huh. Right. And you get triggered and go into what? Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, good. Yeah, it's good. Writing is often a wonderful tool, and it's a way that we know what we know that we're not letting ourselves know we know. Many books get written that way. I can tell you that. Okay, so let's do, so this is what we're going to do. Let me check the time. We're going to do a visualization. And then we're going to break up into, we'll see what time it is when the visualization is over. We'll either do dyads or triads. And we'll keep going. I cannot state enough, and I know I've stated it many, many times, for those of you who have been listening to me talk about this for a couple of years, the importance of this. And I will say that you're here doing this, that you're willing to engage in this is beautiful. Because if you're willing to do the six steps, you're willing to look at yourself and disidentify from your patterns. People who don't want to disidentify don't do this. They hit pillows, they scream, they rage, they act out, they blame somebody else. But they don't go deep into understanding that it's about me. It's about me. It's not about what somebody else is saying or doing. It's about me. That is, as I said yesterday, and maybe today, I can't remember when I say it, that's a major turn. It's a major turn. So, Kathy, let's play something other than compassion. So taking some long deep breaths in and let them out. Taking some belly breaths. Feeling your feet. The grounding, feeling your butt in the chair. Letting yourselves relax. Allow what's here to be here. Not pushing anything away. seeing if you can assume at least for a couple of minutes what Krishnamurti said, not minding what occurs, not minding what happens. And now, going back, in the recent past, to a trigger. And if you're new to the six steps, or if you want to go through the version of the six steps we did this morning, notice a trigger. Simply a trigger. If you've done this before, notice a trigger that's a pattern for you. A pattern for you. Like not having enough, like waking up sad and gray and flat, like feeling like you made the wrong decision. But really, to do that, you really want to be aware that it really truly is a pattern. And then hone in on it. Just really zero in on what it is that the trigger is. What triggered you? And or the pattern that you notice that happens again and again and again. Notice, the noticing is still the same. Notice what happens. Notice what happened, and notice if it's a pattern, the recent pattern. Got still was triggered by an incident, one thing. Triggered it. Sitting at the table, eating, hearing from a friend that you didn't get invited to a party, feeling all alone when a day or two goes by and nobody calls you on the phone. Because these are a basket of conclusions, we do often experience the same conclusion over and over and over again. And we will until we turn to ourselves with kindness, with no resistance to feeling it. So becoming aware of the trigger or the pattern of the triggers, and then the feeling that this trigger or pattern evokes. It could be despair, unworthiness, hopelessness, becoming aware of that feeling. And then noticing either the first time or a recent time where this was triggered, where something happened and what you felt was exactly the same way. Something happened and what you felt was exactly the same way as this recent time. You're going back in the past now. Become aware again of the feeling and really let yourself feel the feeling of it. All feelings come to pass. Noticing how that second step interweaves with this. Noticing if you're blaming anybody else, if you really believe what you're telling yourself about the external situation, thinking it really is about the external situation, taking it back to, it's about me. It's about me. It's about me. And feeling it and seeing your conclusion here about you. And if this is a pattern, becoming aware of what you do when you feel this, the pattern of it. What happens to you? Do you go into cut off? Flatness, depression, sadness, loneliness, despair. And if you're working on this particular time, still notice the feeling and the conclusion associated with it. I can never make the right decision. I'll always mess up. I'm not enough. I'll always be abandoned. There is no one here for me. I'm damaged. Something is really, really wrong with me. Just really notice what your conclusion is. And notice how this conclusion threads through your life. How does it thread through your life? If you truly take yourself to be this, if you believe it, And what happens when you believe it? Does it create more despair? So be very specific about the conclusion. And then with the light of awareness itself, the light of love, with that awareness, realizing, saying, that was never true. That couldn't have been true. That was a lie. And feeling the at least allowing yourself the gift of feeling that that couldn't have been true, even for a moment. Because right behind there is what's never been hurt or wounded. What's behind there is unbounded joy. And then just seeing yourself for a second with the understanding, with the knowing that that was a lie. Allowing the truth of that. That couldn't have been true. And very slowly bring yourself back to this present moment. So we're going to divide up into groups of three now. Groups of three. Each of you will have 5 minutes to go through your visualization. If what came up in the community meetings is relevant, then speak about that. What we're really looking at is the lie about your conclusions and the way that you can turn to yourself with such kindness, with such love, to say that couldn't have been true. The joy that's right behind there is unadulterated joy, and the pleasure goes so far beyond the pleasure of any bite of food. It's just limitless. The joy of your true nature, as they call it. Okay, so dividing into groups of three, each person, again, sometimes in these groups of three, conversations get rolling, get started. This is not about conversation. It dilutes the experience if you start commenting on somebody else's experience or wandering into another topic. 5 minutes apiece. You all got the 6 steps today, so you know what they are. You can refer to them if you want to, if you lose your place. Everybody got... All right, I'll put on my timer. You all put on a timer. Judy, it looks like some people need help here. Help, help, help. Five minutes apiece. And you have the 6 steps already, so you can refer to those. We want you to not be so much in your mind, be in your heart here. If you don't remember what the 6 steps are, refer to them. But otherwise, we want to look at it's about me, what happens when you turn towards yourself and when you release the belief that your conclusion is true. Okay, so I'll see you in 15 minutes. You know, we do the work with the wounds so you can see that you are not wounded. That it was, in many ways, a condition of being born into this life, into this human body, into this form. What we... experienced and learned, and now we can see it rather than be it. And so we do all this work on the wounded conclusions so we can see that they weren't true, and so we can see what's seeing that they were never true. The awareness, and then allow what's here to simply be as it is, to simply be what it is, sitting in this room, feet on floor, hum of or whoosh of air conditioner, face, mask, chair, just that simple. Life becomes very, very simple. Simple. Okay, so who has any comments or questions? This is the time. Grace?
I got to a conclusion of I'm weak, and the initial trigger that I could remember was a situation with my mother when I was young where I was weak. So how can I say?
So I was little once and I ate baby food. What does that mean? We give meaning to things as if they really meant something. You were small, you were weak.
The judgment.
Well, it's the conclusion that you made that has stayed with you forever.
Yes.
That's what we're undoing now.
I want to know how to go beyond that conclusion of I was.
Six steps. You got it, babe.
I did it.
And you'll have to do it maybe 500 more times.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
The question is, do you have the steadfastness? Do you have the earnestness? Do you really want to know who you are without your conclusions? Or do you want to just keep bumping along? And look, I want to say this. There's nothing wrong with continuing to bump along. Most people of the, is it 3 billion or 8 billion people on the planet? I've lost count. Most everybody does that, believes their conditioning, believes they are who they interpreted they were, and they live that out for the rest of their lives. Do you want that? It's not a good or bad, right or wrong. It's how much do you want to be free? How much do you want to be free? How much do you want freedom and ease and clarity and to understand that your well-being does not depend not one whit on external circumstances? Remember, when I was into memorizing that poem, and I don't have it, I could find it, of course, the Naomi Shihab Nye, So Much Happiness, she talks about, it starts out, it's difficult to know what to do with so much happiness. With sadness, there's something, I memorized this, as Matt and I were walking the beach for hours, we memorized this poem, So Much Happiness. Here we go. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah. Well, anyway, as it's coming up, I'll hopefully remember it. It's difficult to know what to do with so much happiness. With sadness, there's something to rub against. A wound to tend with lotion and cloth. When the world falls in around you, there are pieces to pick up. There are pieces to pick up. Something to hold in your hands like ticket stubs or change. That's the value of wounds. It gives you something to do, something to hold. But happiness floats. It doesn't need you to hold it down. It doesn't need anything. Happiness lands on the roof of the next house singing and disappears when it wants to. Even the fact, this is what I was thinking of just now, that you once lived in a peaceful treehouse and now live over a quarry of noise and dust cannot make you unhappy. My happiness, this is not part of the problem, does not depend on my external circumstances. I once lived in a peaceful treehouse. Now I live over a quarry of noise and dust, but it cannot make you unhappy. And here come, I think these are my favorite lines, of course, because they have to do with food. You are happy either way. Everything has a life of its own. It too could wake up filled with possibilities of coffee cake and ripe peaches and love even the floor and love even the floor that needs to be swept. The dirty dishes, the soiled linens and scratched records. Love even that. That's what happiness is. Happiness floats. And you're happy either way, no matter what your external circumstances are. Since there is no place large enough to contain so much happiness, you shrug. You raise your hands, and it flows out of you into everything you touch. And everyone you come into contact with, she doesn't say that. You are not responsible. You take no credit. As the night sky takes no credit for the moon, but continues to hold it and share it. and in that way be known. We love our unhappiness because it's something to rub against. It's something to hold. It's something to do, but happiness floats. It doesn't need you to hold it down. You cannot hold it down. It has a life of its own. This is your answer, Rona, to what about pleasure? It has a life of its own. It comes and it disappears, and you are happy either way. You are happy either way. It's beautiful to remember that. That is why we're doing this work, so that you too could live over a quarry of noise and dust and be happy either way, having once lived in a peaceful treehouse. So what she says in there, everything has a life of its own, as does happiness. But you have to want that. You know, if you don't want it, you won't get it. That's how it goes, Grace. You did it once. Great. That's great. Now try 499 more times. Because I used to say this, and I'll say it again, the process is the goal. The process is the goal. There is utter joy and freedom and ease in doing this, not getting there. You know, you can't do it to get it, but once you do it, you have it. That's how it goes. That's the irony of this. It's the irony of this. You do it because you love it. You do it because you love to be free. You do it because you love to know yourself as your unconditioned self, your unhistorical self. And I promise you this, as you do it, everything around you changes. I was out taking a walk and my mother called me on FaceTime. And I said, "Hi, Mom." And I was remembering how the more I did this, the more our relationship changed. I wasn't expecting it to, and I didn't do it for that to happen. But the more I unwound the conclusions that I made by interpreting how she felt about me, the more free I got, and the more free she got. And the freer and freer and freer she got, so that there's nothing between us now. And it's a miracle. And I didn't do it for that, but it happened because I loved this. And I wanted to know this more than anything else. More than anything else, I wanted to know this freedom. This is, do you? I mean, that's a question to ask yourself. Because believe me, there are a lot better things to do with your time, money, and energy. Not better. I'll take that back. There are many other things to do. You could go camping, backpacking, if you are inclined to do those kinds of things. Those days are over for me. You could do anything. You could go to Bali. You could go to Italy. You could walk the Camino. You could do 10,000 things. And you still could do those 10,000 things while also knowing what you want most of all. Because wherever you go, there you are. You can be miserable anywhere. Really, you can be miserable anywhere. One of the first times I went to Maui 5 years ago, before I sort of made a commitment, okay, this is it, and this is what I'm doing. And I don't care if I do anything else for the rest of my life. I don't care if I write another book. I don't care anything. I am going to commit myself to the process of knowing who I am without my wounds and of being free. But before the first part of that trip, I wrote a little piece called Miserable in Maui because I was miserable. I mean, part of it was, you know, and I now call it fondly the rat condo. There were rats in the condo that Matt and I stayed at. And I think of it fondly now as the rat condo because we saw the rat and I said to Matt, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm not staying in this place. And we moved into a much nicer place. but it was, I was miserable, not because of the rats, but because I was my familiar self. So you can be miserable anywhere. You really can be miserable anywhere or happy anywhere. I think I talked about this in our last in-between, but Eddie Hillesum, the woman who wrote An Interrupted Life, wrote about being a Jew in Amsterdam during the Nazi occupation. Eventually, she was carted to Auschwitz, and she was incredibly happy. From the train headed to Auschwitz, where she knew she was going, she threw out fragments of poems to people standing there. I'm not saying that's the ideal. That is really, really taking it far. But still, we're not getting carted off. We're sitting in a very comfortable hotel room in the Embassy Suites in San Rafael. What are you willing to do? What do you want? What do you care about? What matters most to you? So that every time you collapse, or every time you get reactive, or every time you get triggered, or maybe don't even know you're triggered, or you're around friends who remind you that you're triggered, like I have friends who say, I think you might be triggered, Janine, you pop back. You know that you really care, want, are committed to knowing yourself free, knowing your true nature. What's better than that? Nothing. Because with that, that's the answer to when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. This is the answer to, but how do you change the way you look at things? This is how you do it, by questioning who you take yourself to be and on what you based that on. It's almost time to leave. It's almost time. Having such a good time. Lisa, yes. Yeah, we do.
I want to share a comment and an experience, and I have one question for you after that. I'm just relating to everything you're saying. I've done this 6 steps work for 2 or 3 years, I feel like. I think it relates to what Grace said, but a lot of it has been focused on my dad and I and how he triggers me or I get triggered. I've done it so much that I've had the same experience you've had with your mom, where it's just so expansive and free, and it's freed him more. And now when he says the same things, I just kind of go, oh, yeah, that used to trigger me, and now it's super flat, neutral, no charge. It's just kind of funny, you know. And it's really transformed our relationship, and I feel the same. Like, he's 89. I never expected us to come full circle, but it's happened that way through this work. So that's beautiful.
Beautiful.
And it would have been okay if it didn't happen for me, but how lovely that it has, and thank you. So this 6 steps... for me has worked really well. It's undoing some wounds. But yeah, you have to do it more than once. You have to do it the 500 times. And it does change a lot about life. So I wanted to share that and thank you.
Thank you.
And my question, which for me has a lot of charge, it's kind of awkward to ask, but some of my trigger stuff in the past year, it's more, I guess my question is, that's emotional triggers, I would think there's a physical or sexual abuse things that you could work on. Are those different levels? Meaning, if I'm on the street and a man leers at me and it triggers me, is that the same kind of trigger? Can you work with that in the same way? Have you worked with that? I'm a little scared to go there, but that's kind of what's up for me.
Well, I think the six steps are the six steps. In my personal experience, because I discovered this, you know, when I was in my late 60s, when I could walk down the street with my hair on fire and no man would leer at me. So let's just put it like that. So I don't have that issue now. I used to, but I don't. I think that it's possible. So there are a couple of things. And you already know this answer. When you see a car wreck at the side of the road, you don't go ahead and throw yourself on the wreck. You get out of there. You call 911. You ask for help for the people in the car wreck. You don't add to the wreck by becoming part of the wreck. So if there's obviously, and you know this and I'm just stating it, if there's an abusive person, you don't spend time with them, period. You don't willingly walk into charged situations because I'm triggered, it's about me, and I get to look at my conclusions. No. And yes, you do work on the trigger in the same way. I'm triggered. When you're in a safe environment and then you notice, I'm triggered. This is about me. What did I feel? What did I feel? When did I feel that before? And so, yes, it's the same steps. Yes. You know, for the most part, the cultural reality and the vortex that we're living in is unconscious and reactive and can be violent. And also, this is really true, that the how you know where to be and when to be, it depends on you being true to yourself and being clear in yourself. No, I'm not going to go there. I don't need to. And I'm not talking about an abusive situation right now. Let's just talk a party. Let's just, you know, bring it to a not really a charged situation, but a party that you don't really want to go to. And you know you don't want to go to it, and yet you go to it because you're trying to be nice, or you're trying to be social, or you're trying to be a member of the crowd. And there's something in you then that has gone against yourself. So that's where all the conclusions come in, where you're true to yourself, and when you are true to yourself, you often have a sense, an unerring sense about where to go and what to do and what to say. But that takes, and sometimes you have it right away. I mean, I don't really like parties, so I most always say no. It's not an unerring sense that I've got. It's like, nah, I don't really want to. But if it's something that I'm not sure about, I'll really go inside. But that takes seeing through my conclusions of you should, if you want to be a good person, you need to do this. You need not to do this. So that's why this conclusion work is so important, because when you do it, you really do know what to do. Does that answer your question, Lisa? Okay. All right, alas and alack, it is time to end so you all can eat dinner. What time is dinner? Ah. Oh, there's no, okay. Well, anyway, whatever you do in the next 2 hours, if you eat, may you be kind to yourself. Because really, truly, I do want to say this, which I didn't say, so I'll say it and then we'll leave. We'll end. This really is about that this conclusion work, when you go and you feel the feeling and then the situation and then the conclusion. It's about learning deep, tender kindness to yourself. Because most of us don't know how to treat ourselves with kindness. We don't know how to be on our own sides. We don't know how. We feel like if we buck up, if we do it, then that's good. But the kindness and the love get lost. There's one thing I will read, and then we will go. A friend sent me this, written by another friend. Somebody I went to high school with. All right, let's see. I do have it. I print things on both sides, so it's always a little difficult to find the poem. And if I don't find it now, I will find it later and I'll bring it tomorrow. Here it is. It's called... It's written by a man named Hanuman, who I went to high school with. His name was Tommy Gold then. And then he changed his name to Justin. And now he changed his name to Hanuman. And he lives right here in the Bay Area, and he's lovely. I am with you wherever you are. There's no escape from love. There is no east or west for peace and freedom. No matter where you go, it is always with you. Satsang, this is truth community, that's what we're doing, is the reminder that you're home, that you are the home itself. So you can't return back from satsang, it is your nature. This experience can't be forgotten. That which can be forgotten is forgotten by the mind. But the mind has no access to this arising, to this experience. But be careful and vigilant. You will keep the problems most dear to you. You will keep the problems most dear to you. And so your old friends, your habits will come back and invite you to suffer again. He doesn't know about the 6 steps, I'll tell him. These habits and tendencies are very strong, and so you must be. Break those old habits and you are free. So only travel with those in the same boat. Only associate with those going in the same direction. Go to truth at any cost. Yes, that's the biggest reason to have support. To be in the same boat, so to speak, with people going in the same direction, who also want to break their habits, who also want to see the truth. Okay, everybody, we'll sit for a minute and then we'll end. Just a minute. Well, no, we won't. What I'd like to do is just go around the room and say one word. Will you start, Amy?
Happy. Peace.
Angie?
Calm. Love. Open.
Home. Rachel?
Choice,
calm,
authentic,
love, loved, discovery, and Judy, we need a word from you. Peaceful. And me, I feel joyous. Okay, everybody. Now we'll sit for a minute in silence and then we'll go. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Have a beautiful night.